attitude. Quote, "It would be no great overstatement of the truth if we said that mental attitude is everything," by Napoleon Hill. Here's the summary. Attitude is the key to all behavior, the key to action. In this book, we look at how attitudes are formed and changed. What does it mean to take responsibility for our attitude? How do we create positive attitude habits? What is the price you must pay for success? These are the questions we seek to answer. Life need not be a 40-hour-per-week job and television in the evenings. Life does not have to be just enough money to pay the bills, if you really watch it. Life is more than a 2-week vacation once a year. Life is magnificent for those who understand the rules. It is and can be exactly what you want it to be. There are no limits, except those that you put on yourself. The world is yours. When I was a kid, I used to think the greatest things in the world would be to have meat every night. We had it only once a week, if that often. And to have always new clothes, not someone's hand-me-downs. Life was hard. It was work. It was a struggle. Most of my life, I had an attitude of poverty and failure. I lost jobs, couldn't pay bills, and went through a broken marriage. I even managed to fail out of college the first year. I had an attitude of poverty and failure. It was not until my late 20s that I began to understand and to take control of my life. First, I had to change to control my attitude. The rest was easier after that. Now, before we get started, I want you to be very clear on one point. You don't have to be sick to get better. You don't have to have a bad attitude to get a better one. All too often, we resist a change because we assume change means that we were not okay, which hurts our self-image. It's like saying we are less than someone else. So to protect that self-image, we resist suggestions of change. If you go out and ask the man on the street about change, he will tell you, "I don't need to change. The wife does, or the children do, or the boss does, but not me." Your attitude may be great right now, and it can even get better. Why not get better? Why not do more, be more? Why not extend those limits? If you agree, why not? Then you have already begun to change your attitude. Already, your attitude has gotten better. Within each of us lie values. Symbolically speaking, these values lie at the center of our being. Examples of values are love of life, integrity, good health, peace of mind, love, all positive things. Values are positive and natural. They are positive growth ideas which exist in our deepest core, the essence of each one of us. Outside of these values, close to but not at our center, are programs. Programs are automatic responses. They are similar to putting a plane on autopilot. Press the button and the automatic control mechanism takes over. Basically, programs are designed to help us achieve the values we hold. At birth, we have about 2,000 programs designed for instinct, living, functioning, and positive growth. Soon after birth, we begin to adopt other programs based on the society in which we live and our immediate environment. We accept, usually unconsciously, those programs which we perceive as being necessary for achieving our values or which we perceive as truth. Whether or not these programs actually reflect our values or represent truth is immaterial. It is our perception at the time we accept a program that matters. A child who is led to believe by word or action that he is stupid will develop a program of failure. A child who is led to believe that he has worth will develop a program of success. By the time a child is in his mid-teens, he has adopted most of his major life programs. That is to say, he is already functioning on autopilot. Can you see now how it is possible to end up with a lot of negative programs? That is, programs that are working contrary to your values? Take a little boy who is told, "Men don't cry." Does he stop and say, "No, you're wrong"? Of course not. He thinks instead, "This big person whom I love and whom I want to be like says men don't cry, so I better not cry if I want to grow up and be big and strong." He buys the program, and it doesn't matter that that big person may be unhappy or lonely. because the child doesn't perceive and understand that unhappiness and loneliness. The development of programs is not limited to childhood. Any self-concept accepted, even if based merely on a monetary offhanded comment, can be the foundation of a program. Surrounding programs, we have attitudes. Attitudes are the way we feel. They are the feeling sides of programs. Someone comes along and pushes one of our program buttons. Out erupts a feeling. The feeling may be one of happiness and joy, one of those positive, good feelings. Or it may be of hate or envy, something negative. Finally, on the surface, observable to everyone is our behavior. Behavior is simply the way we act. It is the specific things we do or say. Facial expressions, hand gestures, phrases and words we say are the ingredients of behavior. Generally speaking, behavior is a reflection of attitude. You feel good, and there is a smile on your face. You say happy-type words, you laugh. People know you are happy by your behavior. Conversely, if you feel rotten, everyone knows that too. Downcast eyes, listless movements, a tense or drawn look, a sigh. Can you picture that person? Consistency between behavior and attitude is normal. Generally, we behave the way we feel. Occasionally, it is necessary to control behavior. That is, to behave in a way which is inconsistent with our attitude or feelings. On that first date, a girl is going to behave happy, charming, and witty, no matter how bad she may feel. Or the businessman, meeting for the first time with a $1 million account, is going to be alert and attentive to his client, regardless of how hard his head is pounding or his back is aching. I am sure you've experienced a similar happening at some point in your life. This is a very important discovery. You have the ability to control your behavior independent of your attitude. We do not have to behave the way that we feel. The conscious mind chooses how to act. Now, the amazing thing is that by controlling the behavior, we can control the attitude. We can choose how we want to feel by choosing how we behave. We feel the way we behave. So if you don't like the way that you feel, then change your behavior. Attitude affects behavior. Behavior affects attitude. That statement implies there are two ways to change an attitude or feeling you do not like. The first is to work from the inside of the circle outward. Values, programs, attitude to behavior. To change an attitude this way, you would start with programs and say, I don't like that program. It doesn't represent my values. I don't like the way I feel when the program gets punched. Then you have to consciously choose to change the program and to eliminate certain troublesome attitudes when they come up. I choose to feel better. I choose to feel more positive. I choose to feel successful. By choosing to think positively, by choosing a winning attitude, you will begin to feel this way and then behave this way. As you do this over and over again, your behavior will indeed change. You will begin to act like a happy person, a successful person. Others will begin to see you this new way. The process of changing programs and attitudes by controlling your thinking can be a lengthy one. There are days when I have a hard time controlling my thinking, much as I want to, I hear you say. I'm really trying, but those negative thoughts just keep popping in when I'm not looking. That's the way it seems as you change thoughts. It will take a while, and you might not know in advance exactly what new behaviors will emerge, but change will happen. I think of this as the reactive way of changing behavior. Behavior is changed as a reaction to, as a result of, changes in programs and attitudes. Going the other direction is easier. The other direction is the second way to change attitudes. I may have trouble controlling my thinking some days, but I know I can control my behavior. That is the active way of taking control. Controlling behavior is going at the circles from the other direction, outside in. I choose my behavior. Then the miraculous thing is that my attitude will change to reflect the new behavior. Now keep it this new behavior and new attitude for a while, and lo and behold, a new program has replaced the old. My autopilot program has a new set of directions, ones I have consciously chosen. Isn't this the easier way of the two? It certainly is for me. Would you like to experience this way, the outside-in way of changing right now? It's easy to do. I just want you to jump up from your chair, arms waving in the air, and shout, "I'm excited!" Be sure to get all the motion, all the thrill of a kid jumping for joy at the thought of going to Disneyland for the very first time into your action. Do this exercise now. I dare you to really do it, right now. And I double dare you to do it if you're in a public place. How do you feel? Can you sense the energy, the excitement? If you got up each morning for 30 days and did this exercise, the changes in your life would be phenomenal. I challenge you to do exactly that. I challenge you to do this exercise every day for 1 month and experience the power under your control. Ah, you say, it can't do all that much. Then I challenge you to prove me wrong. Put everything you have into this exercise for 1 month, then write and tell me I'm wrong. It works. It really works. I know it works. I've done it. If you don't like the way you feel, change it. It is your responsibility. There is a relationship between specific attitudes and specific behaviors. Let us suppose you often feel frustration. It could be in your work or at home, or perhaps you don't know why, you just feel that feeling. Are you hating yourself, putting yourself down, being envious of someone else, or perhaps exhibiting dissatisfaction with your environment and those around you? You can change the behavior, or you can change the feeling. You can change from inside out or outside in. Either way, you will shift to the positive, happy attitudes. The responsibility is yours. You will find that you no longer need crutches. Crutches are like aspirin, cigarettes, coffee, or whatever you use to get you through the day. Do it yourself. Stay off your crutches. Think of all the money you can save. Think about how great it feels to be in control, in total control of this thing we call attitude. You are responsible for you. Assuming a responsibility means changing a wrong into a right. In other words, if the way you feel is not right, then assuming responsibility means changing it. Responsibility means to take care of. Let me give you an example of the meaning of responsibility. A while back, right when I was getting Psy started, a business venture was proposed. One of the executives brought an idea to me, which looked pretty good. He had it well laid out and game planned. The whole thing looked like it could work. I had some reservations about the project, but I felt these could be my own negative programs, so I didn't veto the plan. A lot of other people agreed with the plan. They wanted to make it a go. So I put my personal feelings aside and said, "I believe in you. You make it a go." In other words, I gave him the authorization and the responsibility to go ahead. The program was launched, and 11 weeks later, already $70,000 net had been lost. Back for an executive meeting, I was sitting at the conference table when he sat down and said, "Well, I really goofed this time. I really laid an egg. A square one at that. But I accept the responsibility. I really want you to know that I take total responsibility." I said, "That's great. That's incredible. This is the first time I have ever had an executive who would accept the responsibility. So where's the check?" "Well, what check?" "The check for the $70,000. "Oh, I didn't mean that." I said, "Wait a minute. You said you accepted the responsibility. That means if something is wrong, you make it right. Making this right means giving me the $70,000 that was lost." "Well, I didn't mean quite that." "Oh, you mean that if there is going to be anyone bad-mouthed, anyone gets lip service, you'll accept that responsibility?" "Yeah, that's what I meant." "Well, big deal. That doesn't count." Who was really accepting the responsibility? I was. I was because I saw it as my $70,000. I was the one who had to come up with the $70,000 to make it right. Now take this story and relate it to your personal life, your family life, and your business life. Understand what the word responsibility means. Throughout these manuscripts and all my other writings and teachings, I keep saying, accept the responsibility. Accept the responsibility for your attitude, for your behavior, for your success, for where you are right now, for your life. A lot of young people come up to me and say, "I'm 13 or I'm 16 and I'm able to accept responsibility for myself." Are they? I feel they are talking about authority, not responsibility. Authority means the right to make a decision, the right to do something, the right to act. Taking authority is simply making a decision regardless of the outcome. To take responsibility, on the other hand, is to guarantee the outcome of your actions. In a negative situation, responsibility means to make it positive, to make it better. Anytime there is an imbalance between authority and responsibility, there is destruction and failure. When you have a balance, generally you will have success. The most striking imbalance between authority and responsibility during this century was the Nazi regime. Haven't you ever wondered how Hitler got so many thousands of people to do so many inhumane atrocities against their fellow human beings? He did it this way. He gave people the authority and then, in effect, said, "You don't have to take the responsibility. This is your job. It is your authority to open that valve. The responsibility is ours, the state's." And so the people went ahead and did those things without accepting the responsibility. If you have a business or are running one, watch out for that balance. People who have too much authority and not enough responsibility destroy. They are not productive. There should always be at least as much responsibility as authority. When you have that balance, you are moving in the direction of success. People will eagerly accept authority. They resist the acceptance of responsibility. Maturity is accepting the responsibility and totally understanding what that responsibility means. So when I say, accept the responsibility for your attitude, I mean, become aware of how you think and how you feel, and if there is any negativity, or if it is not as you want, then change it to make it right. There is one attitude that I cannot tolerate around me, an attitude that is totally destructive both to the individual having the attitude and to everyone with whom he comes in contact. That attitude is complacency. Complacency, the attitude of being neither hot nor cold, neither for nor against, neither here nor there. Surely you know someone who fits this description. Mr. and Mrs. John T. Average, age around 35, 2.3 children, middle of the road politically, somewhat interested in local affairs, in the middle of the tax bracket, etc., etc., middle age, middle income, middle of the road, and totally dead emotionally. They are dead to life, not buried yet, but dead nonetheless. Do you know what it takes to get John T. Average off his rock of complacency? It takes a full-scale atomic blast, which may come in the form of a massive coronary, a serious automobile accident, the loss of a dear one, the destruction of all his material goods. It is far, far easier to turn the hater into a lover than to move the complacent. Why? Because the complacent person is afraid of change, afraid to take a risk. He has so much insecurity and fear that he is stuck dead center. The hater, on the other hand, is moving, but in the wrong direction. So all you have to do is redirect him. If you have ever ridden a motorcycle, you will understand what I mean. Going along at a good clip, it is very easy to change direction, even if that new direction is uphill. You just head that way. It's no big deal. On the other hand, when you are stopped cold and attempt to push the bike even up a slight hill, it is a job. It is hard, hot, dirty work. If you don't believe me, try it sometime. Most people have an attitude of tolerance about their work. They put up with it, but do not really like it. It's just a means of keeping food on the table and clothes on their backs. The attitude is almost, not quite, but almost as bad as complacency. Who is responsible for your attitude and where you are? You are. That person who really wants to get ahead in life, to be great or to have great happiness, is the person who learns to work, learns to enjoy every aspect of his work. This is the person who sees himself working, sees himself enjoying that work, and sees himself having fun at work. He makes work a pleasure by choosing to see the excitement in his work. He gets turned on about the ordinary agonies and frustrations because he realizes the roles these play in his life. He can see these pains as stepping stones towards his goals. Such a person is not a schemer. He does not have to wriggle out of work and try for every shortcut. He can be honest with himself. Hard work is a cornerstone of the laws of success, and it is primarily an attitude. I've known many men who were brilliant and who were total failures. These men felt that they were too smart for work. They were lazy, shiftless, and refused to apply their abilities. Always they were searching for a shortcut, a get-rich-instantly powder to sprinkle on themselves. There is none. I will tell you that now. Do you want happiness and success? I'm sure you do. So if you do not like work and you do not enjoy making decisions or getting down to the dingy, dark corners of details, then you had better start liking it. Start wanting to go to work early and to leave late. Start getting engrossed in whatever it is you must do. Start looking for ways to do it better. Put away the watches and the clocks, and you'll create an attitude of liking your work. You will become a success. Now I would like to spend some time looking at attitude habits, and particularly at how to create them. Attitude habits is just another way of saying attitude programs or automatic response patterns. Habits or programs are performed under the direction of the subconscious rather than the conscious mind. Most of your daily physical activities fall in this category. Writing a letter, eating a piece of toast, even just getting out of bed in the morning are all habit actions. The muscular movements are under the direction of the subconscious. You simply do it automatically. As a child, through practice and repetition of these movements, you became proficient. The skill became easier and easier. As this happened, you gradually became less and less conscious of the details of movement until you reached the point where there was no conscious effort. The movement had become a habit. The task of performing a given activity has been transferred from the conscious to the subconscious. You are still totally in control, but at a different level of mind. Now, the same thing has to happen with the new attitude you choose to develop. They must move from being a conscious effort to a subconscious habit. Those actions, which are done through habit, are completed with great efficiency, maximum performance with a minimum of conscious attention. I'm very aware of the truth of this statement when I fly. My Cherokee 6 is equipped with many instruments and gauges, more so than the average small plane. After years of flying, I have come to sense when it is necessary to make adjustments in fuel mixture, prop speed, angle of pitch, and all the other factors which a pilot controls. Think of yourself as you drive a car. You will understand what I mean. The sense is nothing more than the subconscious processing input information, such as engine sound, climb rate, feel of the wheel, etc. Needless to say, this is very frustrating to a beginning pilot. Picture yourself flying with me. You would experience a bewildering amount of input because your conscious mind would be required to do everything. If I were compelled to put out the same amount of conscious effort to every detail of flying as I did when I first started to fly, I would not be flying now. Subconscious habits are necessary for proficiency, speed, and mental rest. Conscious attention requires tremendous mental energy. What has this to do with developing new positive attitudes? It means that, in the beginning, it will take tremendous mental energy, a total conscious effort, to create new attitudes in your life. However, through repetition, these attitudes will soon move into a realm of subconscious. Then they will no longer require mental, conscious energy. They will be attitude habits. One word of caution. The subconscious is just as apt to pick up a bad habit as a good one. Thus, if you let your conscious dwell on frustrations, worries, and failure, these are the attitude habits you will pick up. Part of the function of the conscious mind is to supervise the subconscious. You are responsible for its actions, whether or not you are conscious of them, and whether or not you are willing to admit it. Building a habit is the process of educating the subconscious. I have said that you are responsible for changing those attitudes you do not like, and that you can do this by changing the attitude or the feeling itself, or by changing your behavior. In either case, this is what you must do. First, begin with concentration. Your conscious mind must give attention to every aspect of the desired new result. What does it feel like? What does it look like? What behaviors does it cause? What reactions does it get? The conscious mind must be totally familiar with the result you want, so that the subconscious mind will receive clear directions. Could my subconscious mind work with precision in flying if I had allowed my conscious in the beginning to be sloppy? Of course not. The more conscious attention given to the development of the desired attitude or behavior, the faster and deeper it will go into the subconscious. Second, recognize the subconscious. Recognize that it is your intention for your subconscious to take over for your consciousness and thereby create an attitude habit. This can be done through visualization and affirmations. I like to think of my subconscious as my personal helper. I address it and I treat it like an independent person. Hey, subconscious, I am learning to fly and I want it done right, with accuracy and precision, and of course, with a minimum of energy. You watch me for a while until you get the hang of it. Soon, I'm going to ask you to do it. and I expect you to do even a better job than I can. Does this approach work? Try it and then answer for yourself. Third, trust your subconscious. Once you have turned over a task to your subconscious, when you have followed steps 1 and 2, let the subconscious do its work. Your conscious task is to examine the results, not meddle in the details of how the subconscious does its work. If you turn over a task to a trusted friend, do you question every move he makes? I should hope not. Your subconscious is your trusted friend. Treat it as such. One of my colleagues is an excellent tennis player. However, I have a sure method to throw off her game. I simply ask her how she serves or how she does a backhand. In her attempt to analyze her subconscious movements, she disrupts the flow and ease. The following verse expresses this well. The centipede was happy quite, until the toad for fun said, "Pray, which leg comes after which?" This wrought his mind to such a pitch, he lay distracted in the ditch, considering how to run. These 3 steps, concentration, recognition, and trust, are the keys to building habits, whether they be physical habits or attitude habits. Some of the attitude habits I have worked on building are these. I do well everything I do, big or small. I finish all that I start. I tackle the difficult tasks first. I expect good and truth from everyone until shown otherwise. I give acknowledgement to the achievement of those around me. I get a laugh out of life every day. I willingly pay the price. Take time now to make 2 lists. First, a list of the habits you already have that you like. And second, a list of habits you want to create. The last attitude listed above, that of being willing to pay the price, is a very special one. I have chosen it as the last topic of this book on attitude because it is so important. If you are going to be successful, you must create this attitude and make it a habit. What does it mean to pay the price? The answer is not simple, for the price may come in many forms. Furthermore, paying the price is not a one-time action. It is a continual process. So unless paying the price becomes a habit, you will never make it to the top. The easiest price to pay is that of hard work. Most men and women of achievement have had to put in long hours combined with persistence and often strenuous effort. The rancher who gets up at 5 a.m. and works until dark is paying the price of hard work. So is the Olympic champion who practices 8 hours a day besides holding down a regular job. Another price is that of self-denial. Self-denial is the giving up of a present pleasure for a hoped-for future pleasure. The family who will cut out luxuries in order to save money for a down payment on a home of their own is paying such a price. Many of you are now paying the price of self-denial in order to obtain these manuscripts and the messages that they carry. Notice how much harder it is to pay the price of self-denial than to pay the price of hard work. Gladly will my daughter pick up her toys for a chocolate chip cookie. But will she exchange that cookie for a hot fudge sundae some 2 days from now? No way. She has not learned to pay the price of self-denial. Look at yourself, your actions. If you desire to lose weight and can't, if you desire to stop smoking and can't, then perhaps you are not yet willing to pay the price of self-denial. By far the hardest price to pay is that of relinquishing desires. This is the true meaning of to pay the price, for it is the ultimate price. The price of relinquishing desires means that you willingly give up those desires which prevent or hinder your obtainment of another desire. You will pass up one goal or desire in order that the other can be achieved. The man with 2 sweethearts must choose one and let the other pass by. Thus he pays the price. Many a business executive had chosen success over family and thus paid a heavy price for his desire. Others have chosen work over recreation and paid the price in terms of health. The heaviest prices are here, when one desire is relinquished for another. Paying the price does not mean that you must give up everything for your main desire. That, in fact, would be a great injury to you, for it would restrict your interest and attention too severely. It does mean that you must relinquish conflicting desires or modified desires so there is no conflict. You must pay the price by giving up all that interferes with the attainment of a goal. You must give up the image of yourself loafing in the sun all day, every day, if you are going to run a $1 million corporation. You would not have to give up an image of yourself owning yachts or swimming pools and the like, for this image works toward your goal not in conflict with it. The key to keeping the price from being too heavy, to avoid paying for success with a heart attack, is to transmute conflicting desires into desires that support the direction you are going. The man who wants to be a success and keep a close relationship with his family can do so by involving his family in his business, and his business with his family. Business trips can be family outings. The family can learn to pitch in and make the business successful. The conflicting desires no longer conflict. The price to pay has changed. Never think you can escape paying the price. It is there, whether or not you acknowledge it at the movement. And the greater the object you desire to obtain, the greater the price. A Cadillac costs more than a Volkswagen. It may be that the end result is not worth the price you are asked to pay. In such cases, willingly give up that goal. I will not pay the price of the separation of my family in order to obtain a larger salary. There are other roads to success. When I am asked to pay a price, I ask myself, is this end result really worth what I must give up to obtain it? Will I in the end be truly happier, truly stronger, truly a better individual? When the answer is an unqualified yes, then I willingly pay the price. This is the attitude of being willing to pay the price. Know the price for the given object. Determine if the end result is worth the price to you. If it is, willingly pay that price. If not, then willingly give up any desire for that goal. Through repetition, this mental process will turn into a subconscious habit, into an attitude. Said the gods to man, take what you wilt, but pay the price.
This is the end of this disc. The program continues on the next disc.